Hello, you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, the host of this program. And our subject for today is deciphering the self. Yes, deciphering the self. And in a way, this is akin to going on an archaeological dig, digging through the many layers that have been piled onto your being to discover the essence of your true self. So I decided to look up in a dictionary the meaning of decipher, D-E-C-I-P-H-E-R. It's a verb, decipher. And I was really quite surprised to discover, at least in this first definition that came up on my little phone here, that it has to do with coding. Convert a text within a code or a coded signal into normal language. Enable the government to decipher coded computer transmissions. Synonyms: decode, decrypt, break, work out, solve, interpret, unscramble, translate. I found that fascinating because I wasn't thinking of it in terms of a computer code. And perhaps having this definition as the first definition is a little bit akin to the age in which we live, where we are becoming more and more dehumanized and more being drawn into the technological implant, the technological control of the human system. So I thought that was interesting. There's a lot of information in the media that you'll see talking to us about artificial intelligence and how the way to upgrade humanity is to integrate artificial intelligence into the human genome. However, that's not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to the opposite of that, letting go and getting below the programming to the essential self. Though I do find it interesting as well that this definition talks about the synonyms being decode, decrypt, and break, work out, solve, interpret, unscramble, and translate. And I do feel that these definitions apply because we are living in an age in which we have so much input into our mind, into our subconscious, that we are functioning in many ways like automatons because we are tied into a clock that leaves no room or little room for our human expression and little time to think, contemplate, and be inspired. So I do feel that we as a human race are quite trapped by the constructs of our age. And the second definition for decipher is succeed in understanding, interpreting, or identifying something. An expression she could not decipher came and went upon his face. Okay, so deciphering the self. One of the reasons I have come across this idea is because I am discovering through my interactions with people on a normal day-to-day basis, as well as in contact with people and working with people who are working through blocks and issues, I find that one of the most difficult problems that people have is identifying those layers of themselves, those layers of themselves that have been buried by layer upon layer upon layer of various kinds of programming. And we receive, of course, our first layer of programming from our parents or the environment in which we grow. If you're not with your parents, perhaps other relatives, perhaps in an institution. There are all manner of ways that people find themselves born into the world in early life stages. But that's the first layer of programming that we receive. If we're in an environment with reasonably healthy and loving parents, then this generally works out fairly well. The next level of programming is school, education, early life school. And so, of course, the quality of that early education is going to have an impact. So if you have caring teachers, if you have a school situation in which you can maintain your sense of self as a child, then you might fare very well through that stage. If you are in an environment that is very restrictive and uncompromising, you might find yourself needing to suppress your true nature with regard to that class situation, and that can have some complications. Also, what happens in a school situation is that you are programmed in terms of information that you receive. So when we enter our first grade through sixth grade classroom, we enter in as essentially a blank slate. And the system, the design of the system in which we enter, will proceed to fill our minds with this baseline programming. And the question we can ask as adults is, well, how true was that information that I received as a child? The information that we are educated with makes certain assumptions, and it will have a different impact depending on who we are culturally, who we are racially, who we are with regard to gender. So the programming has a different kind of impact on you as a child. And I'm not making a judgment about that. It can be good or bad, but that's a layer of programming. And then as we move out into our higher years of education, again, we are programmed into our peer group and our social group, in which we are interacting with not just our peers, but our peers' parents and how they have taught their children to interact. And we enter that age where we want to fit in and conform. So there's another level of programming in terms of conformity. Then we enter in that higher education, and then we are impacted by another level of programming in the sense of, what it means to be successful, what choices we need to make about success. And then we, as we prepare to enter society, we enter society either as an adept at the models that have programmed us. So perhaps the model is, we need to get a job, support our families. Perhaps the model is, well, I need to get something that's upwardly mobile. I need to be able to be fluid so that I can move through and get the best job and the highest amount of money. To someone else in some other context, it might be about, well, I need bigger influence. I want to go into politics. I want to change the world, be that for my own benefit and my own class and people that I'm familiar with. Maybe it's for the benefit of the overall community. Maybe it's for the benefit of humanity. But we go into this level of cultural programming. And then once in those fields, there's a level of containment in terms of where can you go. So for instance, if a person chooses to go into the scientific field, wants to be a scientist, then they have to conform to the status quo of what science has already determined to be their truth. And anyone who goes against that is going to initially be ridiculed and perhaps sanctioned. And this is true in many fields. It's the same as true in psychology. It's the same as true in the media. There's a predetermined set of guides and boundaries that people who want to flourish in those fields have to conform to. And so I see this as a long journey from grade school through professional life, in which our systems are set up to contain the human being, whatever that might mean in terms of the flourishing of a human being, contain and channel that energy into a construct that serves the system in which we live. And so that when the majority of people are going to happily fall along those boundaries and those guidelines because the rewards are always there as a carrot in front of you. You follow these guidelines, you stay within the system, you will be rewarded economically, financially, the American dream and all that that entails. So people have a tendency to go for that contained and controlled construct. I'm not making a judgment one way or the other, but when I talk about deciphering the self, I feel that people run into difficulties somewhere along this path because the construct of containment and channeling of human energy is designed to serve the system in which we live, and it's not truly designed to serve the human being. So at some point in this path, in this construct, the inner human, the inner desire, the inner creativity is going to attempt to break through. It's going to attempt to reach the frontal consciousness of our being. So for instance, it might be the college student who is having, you know, a brilliant college student, following all the rules, capable of passing all the curriculum, but is having difficulty emotionally. It might be the professional who has gotten full education, understands how to move into the workplace and to complete the job, but they find it internally unsatisfying and frustrating. And it might be the person who's in the workplace who has been doing the job, doing the right thing, but slowly dying on the inside because there's nothing of radiance in that work, and they feel like a slave. They feel like they are sacrificing themselves to do something for good reason, to support themselves, to support their families, but they can't be happy in that position. And then there are people who so wholeheartedly embrace the construct that they become servants to the construct and will be those ones who will turn around and shame someone who has a new idea, or constrain someone who is not staying in their assigned place. So we're entering a system in which human beings are policing each other as much as they're policing themselves to remain within a construct that is designed to serve the construct. So Wall Street stocks and bonds, investments are designed to serve that construct. They're not designed to serve humanity. I'll put it in that kind of perspective. So there's one way that we can say to ourselves, well, if I go to Wall Street and make a lot of money, I'll have a lot of money and I can help a lot of people. Yes, that is one of the scenarios, and I would hope that people would have that objective. But usually what's happening is that because of people are basically not satisfied in their lives and are reared with a sense of insecurity, that's part of what maintains the construct in which we live, then people are never truly satisfied. So whatever job they might have, it's not enough. Whatever money they have, it's not enough. Whatever possessions we have, it's not enough. Whatever position we have, it's not enough. So people are hungry in an addictive way for more and more and more and more in seeking out security. But the getting all these extra perks and possessions and powerful positions doesn't in any way satisfy that person's humanity. And this is why you'll see people who on the outside who may seem like they have so much going on for them, and you're like, well, you should be the happiest person in the world. Well, no, they're still following this programmed construct that is designed to perpetuate the system that we live within. And while there is an argument to be made against the construct and against the system, that isn't the point of this particular part of the discussion. What I'm laying out for you and for all of us is to begin to take a step back and understand that when we run into a wall, a brick wall, and cannot comprehend why we are having difficulty, why are we depressed, why are we angry, why are we destructive to ourselves and to others, why can we not contain these emotional outbursts that come, be that weeping, crying without understanding, raging and screaming without truly understanding why. And the reason that this is happening to us is because we have lived out our lives in such a way that we have built these internal, we have internalized the construct and never actually dealt with who we are as human beings, as natural beings, as a flowering of the earth with a capacity both for chaos and for creativity and for constructive building, a capacity for doing so many things in our lives. And I believe that the impact of internalizing these constructs, it has caused us to keep our soul imprisoned in a very narrow pathway and doesn't allow the essence of who we are to come forth and expand into our world, into our experience, and into our existence. So where does this leave us, really? The realization of this will give us the internal space that can begin to expand the narrowing of our true self, the narrowing of our essence, that has occurred over many, many years of time. And it also gives us a space to understand when we have children, be they children in grade school, middle schools, higher education, so that we can understand the nature of what's happening when our children run into trouble. It can have an application in the workplace. If you are a leader or a manager, it's a way of understanding some of the difficulties that may be going on in your workplace. And when we begin to approach our problems from this perspective, we can, in a way, take a step back from a need to judge, a need to condemn, and a need to resist and a need to fight, engage in the battle. So how this looks on a personal level for those of us who are having these issues within ourselves. Giving you a personal example, if I can. For a long time, I personally was moved through life with a great deal of sadness. I knew the reasons for my sadness, but there was an overwhelming sadness that kind of dogged me for years, decades really. And the sadness that I was experiencing colored every choice that I made, colored every experience that I had, colored every relationship. It was a pervasive sadness. And what I ultimately found myself doing is stopping for a moment and really taking the time to turn around and look inside of myself to experience and to resolve this feeling of sadness. And the first step in resolving a feeling, it might be sadness, it might be grief, it might be anger, is to allow yourself the right to feel those things. One of the ways we get entrapped and these emotions and energies get extended through the time of our experience and expanded into our expression is because we are in some way saying to ourselves, there's something wrong with me. I'm doing this wrong. I shouldn't be feeling this. I am smarter than this. I have to push through it. I have to get to the other side. So all the things, all these sayings and mechanisms that we use to keep our nose to the grindstone are the very thing that's preventing us from resolving. So let's say we're in a situation where we are saying to ourselves, oh no, you know, here I go again, I'm all weepy-eyed. Or, oh no, here I am again, I'm all angry, there's something wrong with me. Nobody's supposed to be this angry. No one is supposed to be this sorrowful. There's something wrong with me that I'm doing this. I have to fix myself. I have to push through it. I have to stop it. I have to suppress it. And so what happens, it just continues until we reach a complete breakdown in our internal systems, and that grief or that depression or that rage just bursts out of us. And it doesn't take much, because there's so much energy to that suppression of feeling and emotion, it doesn't take much to trigger it. You know, just, you know, somebody's turn of a phrase we take offense to, or somebody's look, the way they look at you, all of a sudden you're going to take offense to, or you're going to be triggered. That means that all this emotion will rush forth and into an overreactive behavior. And then, after this overreactive behavior, we end up condemning ourselves again. Oh my gosh, I couldn't control it. I did it again. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And so there's this vicious cycle that we can become entrapped. We entrap ourselves. And so, bringing us now back to my initial conversation, this tendency to use circular thinking as a way of self-entrapment, as a way of suppressing whatever our feelings might be, is the construct. It is the construct that is controlling us. These are systems that we learned at a very, very young age. These circular thinking is something we learned from our parents, first of all, because they learned it from their parents. It's something that was reinforced for all of us in school. Sit still, be quiet, don't think, don't question, just absorb and regurgitate. That's essentially what school is like for young people in most situations, not all, but in most situations. And then when we get into the higher education, it becomes more pressure to conform, to keep ourselves in line so that we have friends, so that we can be accepted, so that we can be loved. And then when we get into the workspace, it's even more pressure to conform. So the very way in which we are conforming to this construct is the circular thinking that we've learned, and the circular thinking is the mechanism that causes us to suppress our true nature. So once we understand that, we can begin from the space of taking a breath and allowing. There needs to be a space of allowing to be able to just feel into where we are, where you are at the moment. So we're going to take a brief pause for a breath. We're going to play just a little bit of music, and we're going to just breathe through that, and then we'll come back with a little bit more on this topic that I'm sharing with you today. Our topic for today is deciphering the self. And the first step in deciphering the self is to allow. It has to come to a place of stopping the pressure, stopping the self-judgment, stopping the self-hate, stopping the fear, and just allow yourself for a moment's time to breathe into your natural self. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everybody. It's Beaty Konvranos, host of the Ask Beaty Show. Thanks to Audio Now, the Progressive Radio Network now has an app. All you have to do is go to the App Store on your cell phone and search the Progressive Radio Network. You can listen live to PRN shows and also listen to past archive shows. So go to your App Store and download it right now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio, and I'm Catherine Davis, your host for this program. And our topic for today is deciphering the self. And we took a brief moment just for the purpose of breathing deeply, allowing our awareness to seep into our natural self, so that we can begin to make that connection to who we are as natural beings. And I believe that this is the necessary step in recovering the authenticity of who we are. So let's get back into where we go from here. We had spoken about taking a pause to be able to reflect and acknowledge our right to feel whatever it is that we're feeling, to cease and desist from the circular judgmental thinking that causes us to stay trapped in these emotions. And the way we can get out of that is to first be able to say, okay, let me understand that I'm angry. And the next step would be to find a space for yourself where you can limit harm. The real first course of action is do no harm, which means do no harm to yourself, do no harm to others. So being enraged or being in grief or being frustrated or sad can be dealt with. But the first commitment that you need to make, first to yourself, that you will not harm yourself, I will not harm myself. I will not harm another. So that's a way of understanding, okay, let me reel in the reactive behavior. Let me reel in the consequences. So it may be you need to excuse yourself from a situation and go into the bathroom and sit down for a couple of minutes and just allow yourself to be where you are in that moment. Perhaps it is you need to find a safe space. Maybe it's a park. Maybe you need to go to a neighbor's house. Maybe you need to get on the phone and call somebody that you trust. Maybe it is to call a doctor or a counselor. But just shift your focus from acting in that state to stopping any harm. That really is the first step. Self-harm or harm to others. And then you can give yourself permission to feel and experience what it is that you are experiencing. So the continuation of these emotions are largely because they are being suppressed. So the first step in pulling the plug on that is to allow that feeling to flow through you in a state of inactivity. So when this occurred to me, my first encounter with it, I was experiencing grief. The grief was the thing I was withholding. So because I am in the healing professions and I do a lot of work with breathing, I was not able to really continue to suppress that energy because the lungs hold grief. And so it kept pulling it up. So I had to ultimately just sit down and deal with it. And so at the time that happened and I just gave myself that space, you know, I have a tendency to be a person who likes to function on my own. So I just, you know, found a quiet, safe space where I was alone and I just allowed the grief to flow. And I have to tell you, I felt like I was dying. It was so overwhelming and so painful that it felt as if I was in a process of dying. I thought it was dying. And I even would have preferred to die than to experience the level of grief that was coming through that I had suppressed since my early life and things happening throughout the early stages of my life, the mid-year stages. And it went on for quite a long time. But I just responded by allowing it. You know, I had to kind of curl up and hold myself and just allow it and just have that experience of dying. It felt like I was dying the whole time. But I have to say, in retrospect, it was a fairly short period of time. When it was happening, it felt like it would never end. But after the fact, I realized it was really only about 10 minutes, 15 minutes of actual time that it took for all of this grief to pour through my system. And then once that came through, I felt clear for the first time. And so then I was able to go on to the next stage, which was to begin to heal and create for myself a mode of thinking and being that was more gentle, that was more self-accepting and more self-loving. And this is when we can go about writing our own antidote. So we can begin to, and we can do this even if we don't go through that stage of just pouring out the emotion. We could also work on it in more manageable parts. So we don't have to just pour it out. We can manage it in smaller doses. But part of that is to give yourself the space by identifying the thinking patterns that are destructive to you. So part of this is really paying attention to what we're saying to ourselves. So if your self-talk is such that I need to stop doing this, or I don't understand what I'm doing, I don't understand why I'm doing this, I you know, I'm just really bad, I'm not lovable, whatever it is to begin to identify it and stop it. So it's a very automatic process. It's a very automatic implant. It's really an implant. And at this stage, at the beginning stages, we don't have control of it. So the first stage is to begin to recognize it. And so when you're having a self-talk that's destructive, we want to catch it in its earliest incarnation in our mind. And we may not catch it initially. So you may begin to recognize that you're feeling that old feeling, be it sadness, be it depression, be it anger. The first time you recognize that you're angry, it's to remember, oh, wait, there must have been something that I have instigated, self-instigated, based on old programming that has brought up this old feeling. So it's to not initially assume that the anger is because of a present situation. It may be triggered by a present situation, but generally speaking, there is some self-talk going on in the background that we're not hearing. And then you can again stop. Okay, I'm in a state of grief. Okay, I'm in a state of rage. Okay, I'm in whatever state I'm in. Let me stop for a minute and pay attention. And you could just ask yourself, well, what have I been saying? What am I saying? What am I thinking? And just begin to pay attention to that little record in the background that's just running over and over and over. And you'll begin to realize, okay, I'm not going to take this path. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to allow this feeling to dissipate, and I'm going to be more attentive. And then we go back into our lives, but with the attentiveness more attuned to this background noise. And the background noise is the programming in your mind. And so as you continue this process, you get closer and closer to catching the actual background phrase. And then what you do is, you know, as you're doing this, begin to, okay, if the rephrase you repeat to yourself is, I'm stupid, put that, make a note of that and immediately write an antidote. I'm smart, I'm capable, I have awareness, I have heart, I'm loving. Write your affirmations, and any time that phrase returns to your mind, speak your affirmation. Just don't allow this background programmed, pre-programmed noise, this voice, take over your system, okay? And you do the same thing when we get triggered. We get triggered by what's happening out around us. Somebody will say something, somebody will do something, and we may even overreact, you know? And then once we overreact, we usually recognize that. We move into a state of guilt about overreacting. So no, guilt is not allowed. It's like, okay, I got triggered. I overreacted. Still the remedy is the same. Let me stop. Let me not continue down the path of this programming. Let me be inner reflective. Let me look at the language. Let me look at what I was saying to myself. Let me recall what I'm truly reacting to. And as we're doing this, what will happen is the inner essence of yourself, your soul, your true inner and expansive awareness will begin to recognize that you are finally working to create a space for your own expansion. And then your soul, your inner self, will begin to cooperate with you and will begin to recognize, oh, let me give you a clue. You're having an argument right now with your boss, but the real issue here is that when you were a child, you felt that you couldn't express yourself with your father because your father made you fearful. Not that he did anything to you necessarily, but in your childlike state, you might have needed something other than a firm discipline. Maybe you needed a hug, you know. So just kind of recognize that the conflicts that we're having may have to do with issues that are much more internal to our foundation years. If you're having a conflict with your spouse, it may be that your soul might begin to tell you, well, it's really not this relationship particularly, it's that you are rather than seeking a spouse, you are seeking the mother that you never experienced. So you're looking for your mother's what either lack, or maybe you're looking for what you appreciated in your mother in this person that you're in a relationship with. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that it's important information for us to understand that we are communicating through all of these layers, and that there's no way that we can expect whomever it is we are communicating with, be it a boss, be it a spouse, be it a child, to understand our own complexity. It's for each of us to individually understand our own complexity. So this is really just a way of moving down that path and being able to free ourselves from the systemic, the program systems that we have internalized, that have become our operating software, our operating hardware, however you think of it, that is causing us to malfunction in our lives. It's generally not the situation. It's generally not the person being engaged. So, of course, the persons that we are interacting with have the same issue at play. So, for instance, once we begin to recognize that this is happening, we can look at our boss, and the boss, it may be blustering and controlling and you know, putting you in your place. And then you can self-reflect, am I dealing with an adult, or am I dealing with a sixth grade bully in the schoolyard? Who am I actually talking to? Am I talking to a 50-year-old man, or am I talking to a 12-year-old boy? And that can inform how you want to respond to that situation. Do you want to respond by going back to your own sixth grade self? Or do you want to respond from a more informed position that understands what's going on and can say to yourself, well, is this an argument that I need to invest in? Or can I serve myself better by having a more expansive view of this situation? Do I need to retreat from this situation and allow this person to recover from being a sixth grade bully? Will this person ever recover from being a sixth grade bully? Is this a situation that I just need to get out of? Is there another way of addressing it from another angle? So I just feel that if we can all begin to recognize that we are not these adult beings in these human suits, we are child beings in adult bodies to a great extent. And I don't think this will ever change. The question is, can we have inside of us not just the child self, if that was a wounded self or not? Perhaps it was the childhood was an uplifting time. It's a wonderful time that you miss in your life. That child self is alive in you. But when we recognize that we're now 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, that we are also an adult self. And so what we begin to do is create a relationship by understanding who that child was. So if you are an adult who in the sixth grade was a bully, perhaps as an adult, you might choose to respond in a different way. So this is not to condemn the little you. No, you're just a bully. You're wrong. No. It's to stand up as an adult, turn into your little bully, and say to the little self, well, you don't have to be afraid anymore. You don't have to fight for your space to breathe. You don't have to prove anything. You're loved. You're me. I love you. You're great. You are the reason I am who I am now, so you don't have to be afraid. So stand by and let me as an adult, me, take care of this situation so you as the child bully me can learn that there is another way to do it. And so you begin to have this interactive conversation with the various stages of yourself by being internally reflective. So perhaps you were the shy child and was afraid to interact. And you as the adult self are facing an opportunity, are having an opportunity for a new job or a new relationship or, you know, something expansive. Then you can turn around to the shy self and say, I understand your shyness. I understand my shyness. We still feel this. It's not bad. It's not wrong. It's an expression of our sensitivity. But we're going to take this opportunity because we don't have to be afraid. We are strong. We're adults. We can take this opportunity. We can have confidence that we can fulfill this opportunity. And then you begin to stand within yourself as an adult in a relationship to the child self, which is the energetic part of you that's holding your old fear, your old rage, your old grief. And you begin to interact with that part of you in such a way that it can be informed that it's not stuck in that place where it was in that sixth grade experience. So what happens is not that you are attempting to grow your sixth grade self into who you are now. It's to honor that childlike self and to liberate that child within you, to be free so that the child within you can be playful, so that the child within you can be creative, so that the child within you can be fearless, so that the child within you can be confident. Then you as an adult can open up the space to merge with that child and to be able to give it the forefront when it is liberated to be the creative part of you, to be the fun part of you, to be the loving part of you, so that you as an adult can once again experience the magic of your child self. And in that magic of the child self, you're bringing the wisdom of your adult self. And so you become merged into one whole being, the child being legitimized and upheld, the adult being legitimized and upheld. And in that space of liberation is where the essence of your soul, the one with the expanded wisdom of timelessness, can flow through and bring you forward and expand your expression in life. So it's a process, but it's an important process. So I am coming close to the end of our time. I'm going to go deeper into this, but I wanted to also let you know that we have some very important events coming up, and this is the nature of what we do. We approach things from this perspective and from the perspective of your own wisdom. So stay tuned, and I'll share with you a few announcements and opportunities, including a free opportunity we're having at the Open Center, an introductory class that you can participate in, and I hope that you will. So stay tuned, just a moment. Okay, first up will be a free opportunity, a free introduction at the New York Open Center, Thursday, January 18th. That's coming up very soon from 6 to 7 p.m. And this is an introduction to a series, Remedy, Practices, and Routines for Self-Healing, a Soaring Crane Approach. It's offered by myself, Catherine Davis, at the New York Open Center, 22 East 30th Street in Manhattan, New York. And I would describe it as a pathway for self-transformation and healing with Qigong based on traditional Chinese medicine, Taoist, and Tibetan healing techniques. The series, the five-part series, starts Thursday, January 25th and continues through February 22nd. If you want to register for the series or for the free introduction, please go to opencenter.org, opencenter.org, or you can call the Open Center at 212-219-2527, 212-219-2527. We are starting a winter series at the Studio Maya in Brooklyn. It's called Enter the Magical Realm, Opening the Way. It's a drop-in practice sessions for Qigong. It's for beginners and intermediate practitioners, energy work, energy movement practitioners. And it's at Studio Maya with myself, Catherine Davis. And it goes from Saturday, January 6th, through March 3rd. From 3 o'clock till 3:50 p.m. It's $20 per session. You can drop in early at 2:45 for the sitting meditation. And you can certainly get more information by RSVPing to myself at my email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. You could also call for information 347-480-1694, 347-480-1694. And we have some more certification series coming up this winter, spring. I'll be offering a course in Essence Qigong, Jade Body Qigong, Soaring Crane Qigong. But we'll get into that later on because it comes later in the year. Coming up very soon is the next meeting of our spiritual support group. The spiritual support group meets in Brooklyn at Janana Yoga, 97 Bond Street. That's on the ground floor in Brooklyn, 11217. And we are saying about this support group, it is no gurus allowed. It's intellectual and spiritual freedom, guided from within in harmony with the wisdom of one's own soul. And we're going to have themes for each of these programs. We have six scheduled in the next meeting, Wednesday, January 17th. And it is from 7 to about 8:45. And it is going to be bringing forth inner guidance through visionary art. So it's going to be, we're going to have paper, canvas, paint, crayons, pastels. And so the idea is to allow the inner guidance to come directly through the hand into the art form. And then we'll have a period doing that, and then we'll interpret the art to see how it's guiding us. So each one will individually be guided through that self-interpretation so that you can continue to do that. We're also going to do a meditation for abundance in the new year. So that's going to be the Wednesday, January 17th. This group meets once a month. Next month, we'll be doing trance dance. That's February. In March, we'll be creating our own gem flower essences. And in April, we're going to have a healing circle, a hands-on healing circle, where you can come and people will be working on you to help you. Either Reiki, other forms of healing will be taking place. In May, we're actually going to build our own altars, our miniature spiritual altar, so that we could bring it to the workplace, put it on the mantle, put it on your bedside, however it works. And in June, we're doing your inner and outer self. We're going to be working on that integration process. We're going, you know, pulling it together. So there's a lot coming up. I ask you to stay tuned. Go to the website, prn.fm, and look for the page, archive page, Heart of Mind Radio. And you will find links to all this information. And I invite you to stay tuned for more great programming over PRN.FM. And I ask you to stay in touch with me, Catherine Davis, through email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. I have a PDF of everything that's coming up. I'm happy to send it to you if you would like, or you could register for our monthly newsletter as well. Have a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to being with you again on Saturday at 6 p.m. next week. Take good care. Take care of yourself. Be gentle. Be loving. And all is well. Bye-bye.